Hey listeners, I have another great episode for you. Just a heads up, this episode does have some content your children may not have heard before, so you may want to give it a listen before you share it with them. Thanks for listening. Hi, this is a Whole Home Podcast. I'm Laura Letario. Now, whether it is your 60th time listening or your first time, thank you so much for pressing play. I'm excited to welcome you to the table tonight to share in the life of your sister, Ashley Sparace. Hey.
Hey.
She is an extremely dear sister to me. A space opened up unexpectedly for the 30th lady who decided to move her podcast indefinitely down the road. And anyway, I had a list of ladies I was considering asking to fill in. Without showing Ryan my list, I asked him who he thought I should ask. And with no hesitation, he said, Ashley Sparace. So here we are. Ashley, God picked you. I'm not surprised he did. I was having a hard time not crying, typing out your notes, as I told you, for myself, because I have been with you for the past many years and seen where you came from and the woman you are now. And woo, it's overwhelming. Even after sharing a delightful dinner in your home a few weeks back and being welcomed in by your family, I could see the difference in you from the last time we were there even. And there is an obvious increase of peace and rest and surety in your faith that just spills out. I also know a good bit of your story, and your resilience and strength is remarkable in spite of the pain you have suffered in your life. And your love for your kids is precious and it's sweet. And I have seen your bond with your husband strengthen year after year in such a beautiful way. I also really praise God for your example of choosing Jesus and a humble life over fame and worldly success. And you are a bright presence, so enthusiastic and encouraging all the time, and always wanting to explore and learn. You are a remarkable godly woman, and I am so thankful for you. That's all I have to say.
Thanks so much, Laura. That really means a lot. Yeah, I didn't think it was going to be that long of an intro.
That's okay. Yeah. So how did you feel being asked last minute?
I felt really excited, but also nervous and unprepared. I feel like I've done a lot of reflecting on my past, which I haven't done in quite a while.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You ready for today?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I am.
Okay. Awesome. God's with us.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll just ask the first question I ask everyone. Where did you grow up, Ashley?
I grew up in the Hampton Roads area. So I was born in Norfolk, Virginia. And our first house was in Virginia Beach. It was actually really close to the oceanfront. So grew up going to the beach a lot. And then my sister was born. And a little bit after that, my parents got divorced. And my mom bought a house somewhere else in Virginia Beach. And my dad bought a condo in Norfolk. So we would go to his house like every other weekend.
Okay. So when you say a little bit after having your sister, I mean like a year?
Two? I really don't remember, but most of my memories were of them being divorced. So okay. I think I might have been like 5. I'm really bad with time, but we're like 2.5 years apart. So
okay. But you do have memories when they were together and you being in that beachfront house, sort of?
Very few memories of that, yeah. Mostly the memories are of being in the house with my mom in the condo with my dad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What made them buy a beachfront house? That sounds so unique and fun and different.
They were both in the Navy, and they really liked the beach. And I don't know. I guess they just really enjoyed going to the beach. I don't know what it was about it. I think it might have been close to the naval base that they worked at. But
I see.
They both got out of the Navy, like, after somewhat short stint. So,
do you think that's where they met? Do you know the story at all?
Yeah, they actually met at, like, a Navy dance club.
Wow. Yeah. My brain can't even imagine what that would be. Like, really straight, stiff moves. I don't know.
I don't even know.
March.
I think
March.
People in the Navy are a little wild from what I have heard.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Does that fit with your thought of your parents?
Yeah. They both really like music a lot, and they're both kind of, I don't know, in their own way, a little bit silly, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it kind of does.
So you said Norfolk, and tell me the distance for people that don't know like me.
It's pretty, depending on where you are there, it's like less than 30 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's like over the bridge tunnel. You have to cross, go under the tunnel to get there from here, but
Okay, so does your dad still live there?
He actually moved across to Yorktown. So when I was in middle school, my parents actually got back together for a period of time. when my mom's cancer came back, which was kind of weird, but also really nice. And they moved to Yorktown. So that's kind of where I spent like middle school until I graduated high school.
So why don't you talk about your mom for a little bit?
Yeah. So my mom was actually diagnosed with breast cancer at a really young age. I believe she was 36 when she was diagnosed. So most of my childhood, I remember her having cancer or like being in remission from cancer. Like in elementary school, she was going through chemo. And I remember her like coming to school and like she lost her hair and she had to wear a wig. And I remember like drawing a portrait of her. You know how you get assignments for school, like draw your mom for Mother's Day. And I drew her wig. And yeah, so it was a big part of my life, going to chemo appointments with her and like sitting there in the office when she like went through the treatments and stuff. I'm not super knowledgeable on like all the different treatments and like the differences between them, but I know she'd like sit there sometimes and like she had a port in her body at one point and they would like, she'd be hooked up to IVs and stuff. But then the cancer like went into remission for a period of time in my childhood, and that was really great. I don't even know like how long it was, but my mom passed when I was 13.
Okay.
So when we moved to Yorktown was when her cancer came back, and my dad basically came, all of us lived together, and he was like helping her with treatment and stuff. She actually enrolled in some studies, like sort of, they were basically like the last ditch effort to cure her cancer. And they went to Chicago to like the National Cancer Institute there. I remember them going on a trip, and we stayed with my aunt during that time. She pretty much did everything that she could like to battle the cancer, but eventually it became metastatic and then just sort of infiltrated like all her organs.
So as you were a kid, I can imagine there's no way you could really understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
How is it described to you?
Well, at first it was just that mom's really sick. I knew that she had cancer, but I had no idea like what that meant. I know that she had to undergo surgeries like a lumpectomy, and I believe that she ended up getting a mastectomy at one point and had to undergo like reconstructive surgery. So I knew like it was really serious, and I could see like the toll that it was taking on her, even though she was really good about, not that you have to shield your children from everything, but she never was like, woe is me, or didn't like desire people to pity her or anything like that. And never, the only time she ever like complained was when she had a headache, and that was it. And she wasn't even really mean. She was just like, mommy doesn't feel good right now. Maybe like you could go play a game. I really don't feel good right now. But my family has told me during like family events, she'd like go to the bathroom and like vomit and then like come back to the party because of like the toll that chemo is taking on her body. It's basically like poison. I really, looking back, like as an adult now, I really admire that about her and like her strength. And yeah, a lot of people handle sickness differently and are like, want all the attention on them, or like want people to, I don't know, treat them differently or something. But my mom really tried to squeeze in a lot before she passed.
Mm.
We always did a lot of fun things together. Like we'd go on, well, she brought us to Disney before she passed away, which I feel like is very ambitious, but
yeah.
That was a fond memory that I had. Yeah. Even though it was sort of a sad time, there was a lot of joy there still. She was so warm and affectionate and just super silly. And I don't know, we would dance a lot together. I really remember her liking to dance. She liked Madonna and Michael Jackson.
That's fun.
I just remember all like the 80s. Voguing and things like that.
Yeah. Well, you just told me the other day you and your sister went to a concert kind of in her honor.
Yeah.
What did you go see?
Yeah, we went to see Alanis Morissette, which I felt really out of place there. It was probably like 50% of the audience was like lesbian couples. And we were just like two sisters there. But yeah, my mom, yeah, she was working through a lot too while we were growing up, because her and my dad got divorced, so I think she had a lot of like anger and just, I don't know, just what a lot of women go through. But on top of that, she had cancer, you know. So
Did you have other family around supporting you? You said you had an aunt. Was there anybody else?
So my aunt was in New Jersey, but she was really supportive. We would probably go there maybe like 6 times a year. Or before she adopted her son, she would just hop on a plane and come see us. So she was there a lot, like even before my mom passed. And then after, like we would still, my sister and I would fly to go see her, or my dad would drive us. And even though her and my dad didn't really get along very well, you know, because my mom, you know, they were divorced, but he would still drive us to see her and we'd spend time there. And it's kind of bizarre thinking about it, but he would drive up like and back in one day. He was probably happy to have the house to himself. That was a big adjustment for him, I'm sure, too.
How long would you stay? Did you take school with you? Did you just have a really abnormal childhood?
We had normal school. I think we probably did like long weekends or like whenever there's like a holiday. I think we'd go there, like major holidays, we'd go there. So I have a lot of fond memories of New Jersey. Not associated with the state at all. Just like my family was here. I don't know. There's a lot of good things in New Jersey.
Maybe. No. I think Duff Goldman's there, the baker. And
oh, nice. I don't know who that is.
Okay, Oliver's favorite. Oh, he's really? Just a, he's fun.
Cool.
But Ace of Cakes, maybe that rings a bell.
Ace of Cakes. Okay, no.
No.
I'm not big on baking, but I like baking. I like to eat. It's good. Yeah.
Me too. So what was Norfolk like?
His condo was really cool. Now the area is really super fancy, but when we lived there, it was pretty unsafe. But it was really close to the beach, so we could just, like, on the weekends or whenever it was warm out, we would just take beach chairs and, like, walk to the beach.
Crazy.
But it was also super unsafe. I remember one time, like, I accidentally left the door unlocked, and my dad, like, freaked out and, like, got a baseball bat and, like, went into the condo because he was worried somebody might have gone inside. I remember, like, eating a lot of junk food in, like, Pizza Hut and Taco Bell. And donuts and stuff at his house.
And then what about the other house after your parents got back together?
So that house was cool. We basically made, my sister and I were best friends with the girl that lived next door. There were a lot of kids in that neighborhood. We were in a cul-de-sac. So I babysat for like most of the kids, like the younger kids. I was like the babysitter. I think I was the oldest kid on the block.
Paid babysitter?
I don't even know if I got paid. I think I did, but it wasn't much. I was pretty young. Like, some of the kids, the age gap wasn't even that big. I guess they trusted me. Mm-hmm. I went to a babysitter class. Like, I was trained. I, like, begged my mom. I guess I really wanted to babysit.
So what about your sister? What was she like?
She's super bubbly, like, would make friends with everyone. She's really silly. We were pretty different, but we were both very studious and got along with most people, but I'd say she was really outgoing. And had a lot of friends.
And how did that differ from you?
I had a handful of close friends, like, always wherever I went. But I was never, like, the life of the party or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So, and I don't think it was something that I really, like, envied. But I was like, that's pretty cool. But I don't know if I ever really told her that. But I just remember, like, her, even, like, younger than teenagers, just having, like, friends over at the house a lot. And I didn't necessarily, like, do that very much.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd kind of, like, hang out with them too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From your early memories, what kind of school did you go to?
So I went to a public school for elementary, part of middle school. And then in middle school, my parents enrolled me in a private school. So from 7th grade to 8th grade, I was at a private school after we had moved to Yorktown.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't a very pleasant experience because, like, so I think my mom died at, like, the beginning of the year or something, like, close to when I had started. And it just, I don't know, nobody really wants to be the kid where, like, your mom died. And it was really sweet. Like, everyone wrote, you know, signed a card and were, like, really sympathetic. But I still had to go to school after my mom died. So
Right. Sometimes,
like, my emotions would just come out and I'd just be crying. And I was just, like, it's already hard being in middle school, and then crying in the hallway is not super cool. But when I first got there, I was very concerned with being cool and fitting in. But then eventually the popular girls, like, excluded me. And then I just really like dove into school and was friends more with the smart kids, or not the misfits, but essentially the misfits.
Did you care? I mean,
I did at first. Yeah, I really did at first. But then I just realized that, I don't think at that age I realized it wasn't important, but I started to realize like, oh, these people are a lot nicer than the people I was trying to hang out with, and they're more genuine. So I'd rather hang out with these people. And I'm really glad that I didn't continue going to that school, because there was a lot of stuff that I guess goes on at that school. There was a lot of like wealthy kids that went there, and a lot of like drugs and stuff like that. That
could in seventh have been. And eighth grade?
I think they were starting. Wow. Yeah, smoking weed and stuff. So then after that, I went back to the public school. And then my dad got remarried when I was 16. So like the tail end of high school, I still got to stay at my old school that I had been going to, but we moved houses like within the same area, just to a different neighborhood. And we moved in with my stepmom and her two kids. And then my sister had to go to a different school because she was like just starting high school. So that was hard because we went to different schools, so we didn't really know the same people. And we kind of like grew apart during that time.
What was your general attitude growing up? Did you just sort of accept things or bury everything, or I don't know. Do you know what I'm saying?
I think I definitely buried everything. After my mom passed away, like we had been going to a church like probably from when I was like 10 until she passed. And then, like, that could just completely stop when she passed away. And people would tell me, like, oh, like, your mom's with Jesus now. Like, we had, like, a celebration of life. Like, she didn't have, like, a sort of sad funeral. It was sort of happy for other people, but not for me. But she wanted it to be, like, more joyous. Mm-hmm. Which I, like, could understand that in my head. But I didn't feel like that at all. Yeah, and it was hard because my dad didn't really talk about it. I could tell that he was really sad. And that's like the only time I ever see my dad cry was when he had to tell us that she passed away. And he didn't tell us until the day after because it was that hard for him.
Yeah.
And I remember just feeling angry that he didn't tell me like the day she passed away. And I'm just like, when I think back on it, it's pretty dumb. But just being like, well, I was happy that one day I could have been like mourning. Mm-hmm. But, and then after that, you know, we weren't like a part of the church that we had been going to with my mom.
Was that something you wanted to go to? Did you feel like she dragged you to it, or was that weird if you'd only started at that point in your life?
No, because when we lived in Virginia Beach, like when they were still divorced, we went to a church with her called Spring Branch, and it was a pretty, I mean, from what I remember, it was a pretty healthy church, and I got baptized there. Like, I got baptized in the ocean. Looking back on it, like, I think I had a saving faith back then. Like, I had, like, a pretty rich prayer life. Even, like, at that age, I remember, like, praying a lot. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, we moved. She found another church. It was called Crossroads, and it was, like, meeting at a school. It was pretty small. But I remember she was very involved. Like, she went to Bible studies and women's groups, and we were, like, involved in the pastor's life. Like, the pastor's wife would, like, have us over to, like, play with her kids. I don't know. But then after she passed away, my dad, we never went back. He never, you know, really talked about God at all. We just...
And what about your aunt or any other family members? Did they have any faith?
So my mom was an ex-Catholic, and all of her siblings, like, went to Catholic school, but they never really professed any faith or anything. They actually had, like, a pretty negative view, like, of the church in general. They just thought all churches are corrupt, and, like, all pastors and priests just, like, want your money, pretty much.
Okay. Yeah. That's intense.
Yeah. So you had a lot of, like, over-intense messaging when I was younger. Like, don't trust anybody. Pretty much is like the main theme of my upbringing.
Yeah.
Not my mom, but my aunt and my grandmother.
Okay. Yeah. You haven't mentioned grandparents yet. I was wondering, where did they live?
So my grandma, she lived in Florida with her husband. So my mom was one of five kids. Their dad wasn't in the picture anymore because they got divorced, and my grandma remarried, and at some point they moved to Florida. So we would see her a lot.
Oh, a lot. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, mostly when I was like pretty young, but we'd go to Florida a lot. Yeah. Probably like a couple times a year. So felt like a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a lot.
Yeah.
Is she still alive?
No, she passed. Yeah. She passed, I think a few years after my mom passed away.
What about your dad's family?
My dad is a very private person. We never really visited his family at all. And for a period of time, his brother lived with us when we were living in the condo. And he's actually a trans man. He was born a woman, but then transitioned to a man and like changed his name and got like top surgery.
Okay.
And he did all this like in the 90s. He lived with my dad, I guess, to get back on his feet or something like that. I'm not really sure. My dad didn't really say. And my dad didn't even tell me that he wasn't a man.
Right.
I found out from my mom. So yeah, my dad was very private about his family. I just know that his parents were alcoholics and they had a really rough like childhood. Yeah.
So are you still close to your aunt now?
Not quite as close as I was, but we're closer than some people are to their aunts, probably. Yeah. I'd say.
What are some maybe other family traditions that you had? If you said your mom was doing better, did she kind of just get really passionate about doing family things together or making memories? Do you have some of those to share?
Yeah, Christmas was a big deal. She went all out for Christmas. She even had like two Christmas trees in the house. Like yes. One would be like the fancy like one that she had like all white. And then one tree would be, we could help her pick the theme.
Fun.
And one year it was Pokemon, and we got to decorate it with like Pokeballs and like little Pokemon ornaments.
That's but, funny.
Yeah, she had a lot of Christmas decorations, and remember pulling them all out of the attic, being like, that was kind of annoying, but I really treasure those memories.
Did she like to bake? Tell me some more things about her.
My mom actually wasn't the best cook or baker. She was in the Navy, so when she got out, she was working, so we did a lot of, like, we ate at Boston Market, which really was gross.
Whoa.
To me at the time.
I forgot about that place.
Yeah, we'd go out to eat a lot, but we didn't have a lot of, like, home-cooked meals when she was, yeah. She was really good at, like, making a home, like, comfortable, and she really liked to decorate, and our rooms were always, like, really cute, and we got to pick like how we decorated them, things like that. So,
all right, at Ava's request, tell us what your first bedroom looked like.
Oh, all right. I only remember like clearly my baby bedroom, and then I had a period of time when I shared with my sister. We had like Hanson posters and Spice Girls and things like that. It was also kind of like hippie themed with like the beads that you like walk through.
Yes.
We had those. Yeah. So
I had those at one point too. In college?
Yeah, I like them a lot. Yeah.
But what about the other room that Ava wants you to share?
Oh, no, the first one?
Yeah,
the
yeah.
Clown room? I'm not quite sure why my mom was, like, motivated to decorate my room like this, but it was, like, red, blue, and yellow, like, super vibrant with clowns. Like, I remember, like, porcelain clowns.
Oh, man.
And, like,
yes.
It was, like, a circus-y sort of theme. I don't know why, but I just remember that pretty vividly.
Sweet. So how would your parents describe you as a little kid?
As a little kid, I was really silly.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I would like sometimes get in trouble at school because I'd laugh so much that like I couldn't stop laughing. Like I used to just giggle while I talked, and they called it giggle speak. But I was also a teacher's pet. Like I didn't like getting in trouble, and I wasn't like purposely trying to get in trouble, but mm-hmm. I was pretty active. Yeah. So probably that.
Would you be the kid playing in the dirt on the swing set, just trying to talk, trying to draw in the corner?
I was definitely on the swing set. I liked the monkey bars a lot, like so much so that I would like be super competitive about it. Apparently I like used to spit in my hand so I could, like, grip the monkey bars better, and it was pretty gross, but it's a memory that, like, my family won't let me, like, live down.
Yeah.
They're like, you're really intense about the monkey bars.
Are you talking about just going straight across them or trying
to I tried to, like, master them at a really young age, and I was always, like, climbing. I remember climbing, like, the walls of my house, like, climbing the door frames.
Yes.
Like, that was something that I did a lot. So maybe I was hyper. I don't know.
Did you do any sports?
So I did a lot of things when I was younger. Like, we tried softball, did soccer. I did hip-hop dance when I was a kid. I really liked that.
Like, a performing kind of class, or?
No, we went to a class and we, like, learned hip-hop moves or whatever. But my mom was really into, like, Salt-N-Pepa and stuff like that. But then as I got older, I, like, stuck with tennis. I did basketball for a brief period of time, but I was really into tennis and was, like, on the varsity team in high school.
Wow.
That was my thing.
Did you like to serve?
I was not, like, the strong. I wasn't the strongest, but, like, my serve, I wouldn't have been able to, like, win a point, like, based on my serve. But I was the person that could, like, outrun everybody. So I wasn't very strong, but I could just keep hitting the ball and, like, force someone else to make an error.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I got good. It's just being consistent.
Yeah.
And waiting for someone else to make the error.
Uh-huh.
Because I didn't, like, train. Like, some people would, like, lift weights or, I don't know, like, do cross training. I didn't. I just played tennis. I didn't really, like, lift weights or anything in high school. So I was a little weakling.
But you're fast.
Yeah, I was pretty fast.
So you're probably not a kid that's just going to sit around watching TV a lot.
No, I definitely watch TV a lot. Like, as I got older, we watched more TV. We went to movies a lot. I remember that being really fun. And swimming. Swimming was a big thing. I was on swim team. I forgot to mention that. Like, I started swimming at a really young age, and because we had a pool at my mom's house, and then we moved to a neighborhood that had a pool. So I was a lifeguard. So I got into swimming.
That's cool.
But I was never very good at competitive swimming, but I was good enough, I guess, to be able to save people.
Even now, do you like the water?
Yeah, I really do. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to surf, but I've never had the opportunity or, like, means, but I've always wanted to learn.
So you haven't really mentioned academics or, like, reading and stuff,
mm-hmm.
but you did say at one point, what did you say about yourself? You said that you...
I was, like, a teacher's pet.
Yes.
So I didn't... I would not have been considered a bookworm at all, but I really liked school a lot, and, like, it was really important to me to get good grades, and, like, I pretty much got straight A's, like, all... Like, I think I maybe only got, like, one B ever throughout, like, school, so it was a big deal to me, and... But I was never the type of person that would stay up super duper late to study.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, like, the dividing line between me and, like, I don't know, my friends who are, like, the valedictorian or something. I'd be like, I still want to be able to do fun stuff, so I'm going to do the least amount. But I took a lot of AP classes in high school.
Was that of your own desire? Is that something that was pushed on you?
I think it was encouraged, but really my dad was not very involved in, like, my school. It was more like I would get, if I didn't get an A, like, I would get in trouble. It's mm-hmm. not like I would get praise for getting good grades. So yeah, I think it was something that I sought out. I don't know. I don't really know why I did that. I think maybe they had guidance counselors and things like that. So I think at a certain age, they, like, put you into, like, different tracks or something. But I have a lot of positive memories from school, especially when I was in middle school. I think sort of, like, digging into school helped a lot to sort of distract me from things that are going on.
Did any teachers kind of mentor you, or were you close to any?
Yeah, I had, like, several teachers that were like that, especially in middle school. When my mom passed away, my middle school basketball coach, his name was Mr. Sims, and his daughter, Amaya, actually was diagnosed with cancer during that same time period that my mom had passed. He was my science teacher as well, so he was very supportive. And then as I got into high school, I feel like not that many people really knew that my mom had passed. Like, only really, like, my close friends, and if I told anybody, but my teachers didn't really know unless I, like, wrote it in an essay or something like that. But
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, in the reverse, was there any subject you're like, no, I hate this, don't like it?
I would say history, but it makes me sad because I just wish that there was more time to, like, spend on different time periods, but I'd say I would just tell you history because I just felt like at the time it was a lot of like memorization of dates and like order that things happened, but not like much comprehensive knowledge of like, oh, well, this led to this and this is why this happened. But I did like AP European history. That was really fascinating, but US history and things like that was kind of dry for me. And I'd kind of say math, but some parts of math were kind of fun.
So do you have like a track of when you graduate, you're going to quote unquote be this or?
Well, I thought that I wanted to be a pediatrician for a really long time. Like I thought I wanted to be a doctor. And most of my family was like, you should be a doctor. Like there wasn't, nobody had, you know, like come from that profession or anything. They kind of just pushed me to like excel in academics. And I mean, for a lot of reasons, but a lot of it from my mom's side of the family and my aunt was like to make sure I wasn't around boys and just if she does well in school, like doesn't get involved with boys, then she'll be fine. Because my grandmother had kids at a really young age and then her husband pretty much left her with like five children. And a lot of the voices I was hearing was like, yeah, you're really smart. You should pursue this. But not much, I don't know, like practical wisdom, I guess, if that makes any sense.
You're still continuing to visit your aunt all the way up through high school. So is she probably one of your biggest mentors in your life?
Oh, for sure.
Say?
Yeah. I mean, she still is a feminist. She'd say things like, if you got an education, like they can't take that away from you. You should try to get like the highest degree that you can. Yeah, I mean, she also was there, like, to support me emotionally as well. Like, so it wasn't just, like, pushing all this stuff on me. It was also, like, getting to know me and, like, talking about things that happened at school or, like, when I had my first period, I called her.
Yeah.
So she helped me a lot, like, navigating things with my dad, too, because my dad, I mean, it was hard. I think it was hard for him having two girls and having to do that on his own.
Yeah, good point.
I mean, it was like several years that he was just by himself with us. So I think that that was really hard on him.
So what was the average day like for you in high school?
So I think senior year I was allowed to drive. I drove my stepmom's minivan and I would like blast the music really loud to like wake myself up. We had to be there, I think, at something crazy early, around like 6 o'clock or something. It was pretty intense, like
that
how early
intense.
We had to get there. And then, but then we got out at 1:47 p.m.,
okay.
which is very early. And then that left time for practice for tennis. So, like, if it was tennis season, I would, like, get out of school, immediately get changed, and go to the tennis courts and play until maybe, like, 4, and then come home for dinner. So,
did you work during school or just lifeguarding, I'm guessing, during summer?
I didn't work during the school year. I worked over the summer. So, towards the end, like, of high school, I was working, like, 30 hours, as much as I could work and not be full-time, I was working.
So your aunt said stay away from boys. Did that happen?
I mean, in middle school, it kind of did, yeah. I mean, I had crushes and, like, boyfriends, but the most we did was, like, hold hands. And, I mean, faith was, like, a big deal to me, and I wanted to, like, stay pure for marriage for a while, but then eventually that, like, wasn't a priority for me. But I was kind of just friends with boys. Like, a lot of my friends were guys, but we weren't, like, together. Like, I didn't really date. So I didn't, like, mostly, like, the nerdy boys that I hung out with, like, had crushes on me. But I just wanted to be their friend. And that was the most action that was happening. I don't know. Yeah, even the popular boys at school, for whatever reason, I wasn't really interested in them. I just was like, you're kind of dumb. Like,
did you go to prom or any dances or things like
that? I did go. Yeah, I went to prom and ring dance.
Well, what was your style like then? Let's go there. Give us a description of yourself in high school.
I didn't dress preppy. I'm trying to think. And I didn't dress like goth or alternative. It was more, I like to wear stuff from Forever 21. I was kind of just drawn to different like colors and pieces, but then other times I would just wear like yoga pants and a t-shirt. So but I was sort of into fashion, but I wouldn't say I was like the most fashionable person. But I did appreciate, like, going shopping and stuff like that. And I did care about, like, my appearance. Like, I would, like, straighten my hair and things like that. And I wore, like, some makeup, but not, like, a full face of makeup. If that makes sense. I don't know.
So would your family actually eat dinner together? Would you hang out on the weekends with your family or just say, I'm going out with my friends or what?
So when my dad got married to my stepmom, we would probably have dinner together maybe like 3 nights out of the week, probably. We all had like different things going on. My stepmom worked a lot, so she'd come home late. My dad would cook the dinners and she would come home and like we'd all sit down. But I don't remember it being like a pleasant time because my stepmom was very cold and like distant. So I just remember like family dinner being like really unpleasant, not like joyful or like something that I looked forward to.
Where would you go for holidays and things like that?
Earlier on in my life, we'd go to either Florida or New Jersey. But then after my dad got married, occasionally we would go to D.C. to see my stepmom's family.
Oh, okay.
So my stepmom's children, her youngest was 10 years younger than my sister. So her kids were a lot younger than us, which I actually kind of liked. Like, when they were first getting to know each other, like, I'd babysit her daughter. So it was more like a mother figure sort of thing instead of, like, a sister.
Did you continue to babysit up until the end of high school?
Not really, because it's pretty sad, but, like, the blended family situation, in our case, like, really didn't work out. There was a lot of, like, bitterness and, like, jealousy over, I guess, the amount of time that I was spending with my stepsister and, like, the bond that we were developing instead of, like, fostering it. I think my stepmom felt, like, threatened by it instead of, like, encouraging it. So she kind of, like, tried to make sure that we didn't have that much time to spend together, which really made me sad because, you know, I really loved her and, I don't know. Just feel like it could have been like so beautiful, but it was just so broken.
Did they stay together? Are they still together?
No, they got divorced when I was in college. So at first their marriage, I guess, was like a happy one. I don't really know exactly like what went wrong, but there was a lot going on there. So my stepmom actually had lupus. I think she was diagnosed when they got married, like after they had gotten married, and that really, you know, took like a big toll on her, and she was working full time. So I don't really know what happened, but there's a lot of brokenness with their relationship. I don't know how to explain it.
So would you go hide out in your room kind of thing? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I spent a lot of time in my room, like listening to music, doing homework. I wasn't really at my friends' houses very much. We'd play Guitar Hero. Like sometimes I'd hang out with my step siblings. Like we'd play Guitar Hero together. We'd play Wii together, but then, you know, if, like, something happened, like, it would be pretty bad. Like,
when did you know that you wanted to go into the sciences?
That's a good question. Honestly, I didn't really know for sure. I just knew, like, I wanted to help people, and I knew that I was good at it. But it wasn't until probably, like, college that I really, like, wanted to pursue that. I was listening to Katie Becker's podcast, and she was mentioning French. Like, mm-hmm. French was a big part of my high school, like, experience.
Wow.
Yeah, I took, like, all the advanced French classes that I could, and I was, like, the vice president of the French Honor Society.
What? What does that mean?
It really didn't mean anything, but there was, like, French Honor Society and French Club, which I was in both. But French Club was more just, like, social and more about, like, French culture. Mm-hmm. And we would... There's actually a sister city to Yorktown,
okay,
called Port-Ventre in France, and, like, every year we'd, like, have a parade. Well, they would have a, like, not us specifically, but we'd participate in a parade at Yorktown.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So when I went to college, I thought that I wanted to minor in French, but then eventually when I took the classes, they put me in online classes, and I was like, this is kind of dumb, so I just dropped that.
Do you remember what made you initially get involved in high school? Was it just kind of an accident?
Well, I really liked my French teacher, and I was really good at it. And I guess I sort of just had a fascination with the French culture. I don't know really what it was. And I liked French music. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's fun. Do you have a dream to ever travel there?
Yeah. I try not to think about it too much because I don't want to, like, you know, get my hopes up. But I've heard mixed things about, I don't want to, like, get my hopes up and then go and it'd be, like, terrible or, yeah, like, really dirty. Or honestly, I'd probably rather go to Italy. Yeah.
Totally. Me too.
Yeah.
I just recently, in the past couple of weeks, had my kids start to watch something called Rick Steves, like, travel through Europe or with Europe. I don't remember. But I grew up watching that. Have you heard of it?
No, I haven't, but it sounds interesting.
I don't know what the popular travel shows are now, but at the time when I was growing up, he was, if you thought of travel, you thought of this guy. He's just really a very specific guy with a specific personality, yeah, but he's fun to watch, and he's on YouTube and still, like,
I'll
all the past episodes. And so earlier today, Ava didn't know what to do. She has stretches for her, just some back issues that she has, and I was like, why don't you put on Rick Steves so I could hear
some kind of
French music up there or something.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
There's a really cool French rapper
I
can tell her about, but yeah.
That's fun.
But yeah. And for a while there, I was, like, trying to stay current with my French. I was, like, doing Duolingo and things like that, but I don't really do it anymore.
Does Katie know this about you?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
So Ava was remarking just the other day, she's like, Mom, I keep running into ladies that know French or studied French, and it'd be fun to just make a list.
We can have a French conversation group. That would be so cool. I was always too intimidated to do that. I had this opportunity when I was in high school. One of my close friends used to live in Europe because her dad was in the military. And she had, like, one of her French-speaking friends come over from France to, like, stay with her. Mm-hmm. And we went to Busch Gardens with him. And I was just so nervous. I didn't even speak French. But he spoke, like, perfect English, so it was okay. But I wanted to, like, be courageous and talk to him in French, but I didn't. I should have.
Well, even if it's once a year or something, it would be, what was the name of your honors club?
Oh, French Honor Society.
You could start the annual meeting of the Remnant French Honors.
That would be cool.
Fun. I took French all throughout college, 3 years of it, but I don't know. I think some of it would come back.
I think it probably would.
Just been a long time. All right. So how did you jump to the sciences? Because that's what I think of when I think of you.
Well, so I thought I wanted to be a pediatrician. And then when I got to college, I sort of was thinking about being an oncologist. And I was, like, learning about cancer biology. So I thought maybe, like, I wanted to do something with that. And I took a class called Biology of Cancer, and I learned a lot about that. But then I realized when I was doing an independent study in college that during development, like, during early development, like, when you're in utero, like, basically a lot of the same processes that are occurring then occur during cancer, but cancer has, like, hijacked these processes that, like, normally occur in the body, but is using them to, like, nourish and grow a tumor. So that was basically, it was kind of like a long, drawn out process, but I'd say taking that cancer biology course and taking neuroscience in college. Yeah.
What is neuroscience?
Oh, like the study of the nervous system. Like, yeah, that wasn't really on my radar at all.
Okay.
I always thought, I was really fascinated by psychology. Like, in high school, I took AP psychology, and I thought, like, oh, maybe I want to study psychology. So I was very interested in, like, the brain and sort of, like, why people are the way they are. And so it seemed like a good, like, fit of both. But I'm still interested in psychology, but it seems like it's less of a hard science the more that I learned about it.
And so you ended up pursuing neuroscience.
Yeah. So I did an independent study when I was in college. I basically started off doing a little project in his lab, and it just sort of went from there. At first, I really enjoyed it, but towards the end of my scientific career, lab work became more sort of, like, draining. Like, because I'd say my personality changed a little bit too. Like, I was pretty content with being, like, by myself and just not with anybody else. Because a lot of the work is, like, really isolated and you don't talk to anybody.
Oh, really?
The work that I was doing was, like, experiments, and then when I'd have to, like, image them, so I'd, like, go in a room with this big microscope and a camera and, like, take a bunch of, like, really small pictures and, like, stitch them together, but that process would take, like, hours, and I'd just be, like, in a dark room by myself for, like, hours. So Towards the end of it, I ended up becoming like kind of jaded and I don't know, not as enthusiastic as I was when I first started. And I just also started to learn more about the scientific process and how like human nature sort of gets in the way of like, I don't know, like in an ideal world, the things that would be getting published are like the best research or I don't know, but a lot of it is like politics and like who has the most money and whose lab is the most well-known, like they'll publish their work just because it's like has some person's name on it that's like really, I don't know, renowned in the field. So became kind of jaded towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
And my worldview also changed pretty drastically. So it was a lot of factors.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know kind of the end of this, but I would say most people don't know this. So I just want to jump to the end and then maybe can fill in the middle. When I first met you and then a little years after, you were working in a lab, you were teaching, you were having grant opportunities. I mean, you were pretty successful in what you did. So you were doing this, you're saying you didn't really necessarily love it, or?
I did at first. Yeah, okay. I actually really enjoyed it, and the learning and the hands-on nature of it was really like what kept me going. But it was hard work, and most people that age like aren't doing that. It was a lot to sort of manage, and just I had to like be very dedicated, and a lot of the people I was around, that was all that they would think about like day and night, and I had a lot of other things going on that I was thinking about at the same time. So I feel like if your worldview is pretty static and like you're a scientist and you're like, this is all that there is, there's nothing more to experience or like find out about this world. Like this, my main goal in life is to be successful and I don't know, like make some big scientific discovery.
Mm-hmm.
Then I could see why that would be the case for my peers. But while I was in it, I was like that.
I was going to say, yeah. It seemed to have a pull on you, like the tides. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, you don't really realize it.
Yeah, but. Well, I was getting a lot of praise from the people I worked with, like my boss, my advisor, and like I had work that was published, and that was a big deal, like not that many people. And I like entered my master's program at a slightly earlier age than some people, and just the fact that like I got in, and people in my family were just really proud of me. And it was kind of hard to deny it. Like, why would I do something else? You know what I mean? If, like, everybody's telling me, like, you're doing such a good job. Keep going.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But then it was always ultimately not satisfying because I'd achieve all these things. But at the end of the day, like, you know, I'd be depressed or, like, I'd still have these problems or, like, unanswered questions. And achieving all of this didn't really make any of that go away. So,
I mean, even opportunities, like I mentioned, for you to pursue a really prestigious grant, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that would have sent your life in a very specific direction,
mm-hmm.
I'm guessing. And you said what?
Yeah, I said no. Yeah. Yeah. So I applied for a Fulbright and I could have been going to Australia. And I don't know. Like, yeah, it's hard for me to like remember or relate to that time in my life. Because it felt like my life hadn't really started, but it had. Like your life, it's, you know, your life starts when you're born, I guess, or before you, when you're in your mother's womb. But at that point, it just felt like, I don't know, the sky's the limit, I guess, or something. And like, if I were to choose marriage or staying in Richmond, that would just limit like all the possibilities and it wouldn't provide a life that I thought that I wanted. But it was definitely a hard decision. And we talk with Pastor Brian about it. We talk with you guys about it. We talk with a lot of people about it. But it's really hard for me to remember the specifics of like where my mind was at that time. And things with David, they are serious, but in my mind, they kind of weren't. So I was pretty selfish at that point in my life.
Did you meet David in college or after?
I met him when I was in my master's program and he was in his undergrad. So we, I could tell
a story. Sounds like a great story.
Yeah. So like you're saying before, I was, in my master's and part of, for VCU to like pay for my degree, I had to like agree to teach labs for them. So I was teaching by 151 and David was actually in my class in my lab section. Yeah, it's an interesting story and it feels like so long ago and it felt a lot more taboo back then, which I guess I wasn't like a tenured professor or anything, but when I told people, I was, like, kind of embarrassed. But we didn't start, like, dating or anything until after the class was over. But I was, like, getting to know him because he would stay after class and, like, I guess just ask extra questions and, like, try to get to know me. But at some point towards the end of the semester is when he invited me to community group and invited me to Remnant. He told me, like, my parents edited the textbook for this class. And I was like, you are such a liar. Like, I did not believe it. I was like, who is this person?
But they did.
Yeah,
right?
They did. They actually did. They did. Yeah. I looked and I was like, oh my gosh, this guy's legit. But yeah, during the time that I was teaching, David was just sort of this weird, not enigma, but just like, he seems like a dumb skater kid. But then when you talk to him, he was mm-hmm. not. So I was just like, who is this person? And why is he talking about all these profound things that I'm interested in and like wanting to know answers about? But I guess he wasn't really going to your community group like very regularly, but he was like, oh, I got this community group and you should check out this church. It's really good. And the first time I went to Remnant was Mother's Day like, I think 2015.
Wow. And was that the first time you'd been in a church since your mom?
Well, my next door neighbor had been like taking us to an Episcopal church, but it was a lot different than that church that I was going to. Like, mm-hmm. so different. It was like, wow. Everybody just seemed so like genuine and they weren't trying to like get anything from me or like get me to do.
At the Episcopal church?
No, I'm talking about Remnant. But oh, okay. The Episcopal church was more like a lot of like rituals and I was going to a youth group there, which I don't really remember like what I learned there. It was mostly like a social thing, but I just remember like having to stand up and down a lot and like praying like specific prayers and stuff. But there's a whole backstory with that, but like that experience and then my stepmom being like Catholic and we went to her Catholic church just left like a really bad taste in my mouth with like just feeling like church was just very legalistic and I didn't really understand like the need for Jesus, I guess. Like I didn't really understand I just thought that Christians were people who just acted better than other people, I guess, for a while.
So when David asked you to go to community group, were you totally thrown off guard?
I probably was. I don't think I had a good sense of what it was. I think I remember being really nervous, but it's hard to say because it was so long ago. But I was very curious, like, what is this about? Like, this is interesting.
That seems pretty bold of him. Was it just I don't know. Maybe I wonder what made him do it.
Maybe he thought I wouldn't have taken him up on it. I don't know.
So he was interested in you, or was he just asking you as, like, his professor, as his teacher? Like, hey.
I think he was. Yeah. I mean, at the very end of the year, we walked out of class together, and, like, we walked, like, through Randolph to his house, and I, like, dropped him off, and I was like, that was probably a bad idea, because Randolph was really unsafe. But, like, we just, whenever we would talk, we would just talk for a really long time, and it felt like time just passed by really fast, and just doesn't really happen with everyone you meet, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that was, you know.
Would he talk about science, or would he tell you about being a painter? Or what do you remember what he talked about? Or did he talk about
God?
It
was a lot. He did talk about God. It's really hard for me to remember, but I remember like feeling like our conversations were like a lot more mature than the conversations I was even having with some of my fellow grad students. He was very, at that time, interested in like space. In like, I don't know, he had a lot of extensive knowledge about the stars and the universe and things like that. And I thought that that was pretty, in like physics. And we talked about a variety of things, I'd say, sometimes about painting.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought that it was really cool that he painted. That was something that kind of drew me to him. Yeah. And I remember like early on when we were dating, like going to some of his shows and like seeing his art. I thought that was cool.
I forgot to ask you, did you have any hobbies?
I just worked a lot. I feel like a lot of my hobbies were just like involved with my work.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I wasn't super like crafty or anything like that. And I didn't really play video games. I read occasionally, but nothing intense. I would say probably not. I was just working a lot. Like even when I was in school, like I would have jobs. Like in college, I worked at Tropical Smoothie. So like every time, I felt like my time was very like regimented. Yeah, like undergrad, I worked at Tropical Smoothie. Then grad school, like I worked at a child development center. So not really.
That's okay. Then David, what happened then after he left your class? How would he find a way to talk to you?
Oh, well, like we'd text each other and then he'd like invite me to things that were happening. If he had like an art show or community group. Eventually we started going to community group regularly together, but I don't really know like how quickly that happened. Like I remember specifically like going to your community group for the first time,
mm-hmm.
but I don't remember like if after that we started going like every week, I can't remember. But at that time, yeah, I just remember being very surprised that you're opening your home. And I was like, this woman is very generous. Like, she has these young children and she's like opening her home up so late. And I just was like, wow, there's something different here. And I couldn't like put my finger on it and just wanted to know more and wanted to stick around.
Speaking of David asking questions and opening my home up late, one of the reasons was David. Yeah. He always has so many questions.
Yeah. I'm sure that got annoying.
No. It was awesome. It was so awesome.
Yeah, we came from, we bonded over like coming from similar backgrounds of very like a secular view of life and like being pretty like scientifically literate and like knowing like, you know, some things that people just like don't really think about and like how do you reconcile these things, and just having a lot of questions about like the origins of the universe and things that I haven't thought about in years. But I remember this book called Genesis Unbound that I'm pretty sure Ryan recommended, or some of the pastors, and recommending that to somebody like who asked me about how do you reconcile like your, I don't know, like I have to teach about evolution. What, I don't even know what, like where to start. And I'm like, honestly, that's something that's not even a big stumbling block for me anymore, because I feel like back then I was really relying on my own understanding a lot. And like, I have to know all the answers in order for me to believe. I have to have everything figured out. And like at some point I just realized I'm not God. Like I don't know all the answers and I may not ever know until, you know, I'm in heaven and then like everything will make sense. And but now it's hard for me to relate to like how deeply skeptical I was. And I think it also had a lot to do with like the people in my life who were like the biggest voices were just very like, you better watch out. That sounds like a cult, or you can't be serious. Mom's, like my sister would say things like my mom's faith wasn't genuine, that it was just like wishful thinking, and that she was just desperate because she was dying. Jesus isn't real. Like, this life is all that we have. Like, just make the most of it. And just feeling, like, pulled in so many different directions and not knowing, like, what's true. And I really was, like, concerned with, like, what's the truth?
Yeah.
Because at that point, I was just really confused.
So there was never really a point that your mom's passing away turned you away from God, per se? You just kind of...
Well, there was. So there was a specific woman who was really close with my mom before she passed. Her name was Joyce. And she's a believer. And she would, you know, take my sister and I, like, out to lunch at Panera. And, like, you know, people would say, like, generic things, like, your mom's with Jesus now. And, like, she's no longer suffering. But I just never really had like a good sense of like why she had to die. And like, you know, like we went to like some like healing, I don't really know what you call them, but like ceremonies or like services when we were kids, like where like people would put hands on my mom and like there was candles and things and like they're really praying for her to be healed.
Yeah.
And just being really confused, like why she wasn't healed. Like she believed, like she, I thought like, oh, she's like a good person. Why wouldn't God spare her? Like I'd say that I might have been like angry at God for a long time, or just like doubting his goodness, like for a long time, just confused. And it must have been hard for the people in my life. Like, what do you do with this little girl? Like, how are you supposed to talk to her? Her mom just died. Like, what do I even say, you know? But I feel like I could have benefited from maybe more people, like, speaking boldly, like, God loves you, like, he loves your mom, like, sin entered the world, and, like, we live in a fallen world, like, it's not anything, like, she did in particular that, I don't know, like, led to this, or, I don't know, I was just confused.
Yeah. Did you remember having heard about Jesus, or just sort of God in general?
I mean, when my mom, like, was taking us to church, I was pretty aware of things at that time and, like, felt like I was putting things together. My mom let me watch The Passion of the Christ when I was really young. And I remember that having a really big impact on me. Like, telling people now, it seems kind of weird. Also kind of weird that my mom let me watch it, but I remember it having a really big impact on me and just, like, feeling the gravity of, like, my sin and, like, how much Jesus loved us.
Yeah.
Was really like apparent to me at that time. But then I kind of just felt like as I got older, nobody was really like speaking into my life. Not that I'm not blaming anybody. I'm just saying like as a Christian, it's pretty important to, like, continue to, like not be led astray. And, like, there was nothing in my life that was, I don't know, there was, like, no truth being spoken into my life, I guess. It was all just, like, noise.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just kind of following, like, the culture or, like, you know, like, what we learn in school. It was just life goes on without God, I guess. Or I don't know. Like, God doesn't really matter. I don't know.
Would you consider coming to Remnant a significant turning point in your life?
Yeah, I would. I was thinking about that question a lot. But I'd say yes, because I just felt like everybody who I, like, encountered when I first started coming was just so genuine and kind and compassionate. And, like, any question I had wasn't met with, like, why are you asking this question? Or, yeah, short answer is yes. Yeah.
Well, you said you were thinking about that question in particular a lot. Was there anything else that you thought of that you wanted to share?
Well, I've had other, like, turning points, but I'd say that that's, like, probably the most important one. But there's, like, the death of my mom was, like, a turning point when I, like, sort of, I guess, not walked away from the faith, but was just, like, wandering or just was confused. And then, like, when I was in college, I had some pretty low points when I was, like, doing drugs and just, I don't know, like, what's the point of this? So, but those are more, like, minor, I'd say.
Yeah. Well, something had to make you start and stop, particularly, you said, if you were doing drugs for a while.
Yeah. Well, when I went to college, I first started going to Virginia Tech, and I really wanted to go to VCU because most of my friends, well, the friend group that I was hanging out with at the time was here, and I really wanted to leave, and there's also a guy that I liked that was here. It all ended up, like, working out. I'm here now, and I met David and everything, and I'm going to Remnant, but it was a very long story of when I first moved to Richmond. I was, like, couch surfing. My dad was really against me moving here, didn't think it was a good idea. The people I was hanging out with were pretty much, like, hippies and just, like, smoked weed and were, like, experimenting with other drugs, and I was living with them. It was just not a good time. There was this one time where we decided that it would be a good idea to chew Morning Glory seeds, and it's, like, the compound that's in the seeds is, like, similar to LSD.
Oh, wow.
So, like, I had a really bad trip when I was with them. Like, we all got, like, violently ill, and it lasted for hours, and it was so terrible, and I thought that I was gonna be like that for the rest of my life. Like, it was so terrible.
Wow.
And then after that happened, I had enough sense to call my dad, and I knew that he'd be really disappointed in me, but I didn't even know, like, what to do. And then at that point, I was just became, like, more serious, and I knew that my friends were going to continue doing that, but that wasn't going to be, like, my story, and it wasn't something I was going to mess with anymore, because I just could see how that can really, like, derail and, like, ruin your whole life. Like, deep down, I knew that that wasn't what the purpose of life was for. Like, I knew that there was so much, like, richness there, but at the time, I just couldn't see it, and at least I knew that that wasn't it. Then my dad basically, like, made me sign this contract thing saying that I wouldn't do drugs anymore, and I didn't. Well, occasionally I would smoke weed, but that's it. And yeah, from there I just got very serious. Like, I was always serious about my studies, and I never let things like that interfere with, like, my work or my school, but then my life and my friends' lives took, like, very different trajectories. And then after that, I just really, like, dove heavily into school and kind of kept to myself. I had, like, a long-term boyfriend that I dated for, like, 3 or 4 years before I met David. So, yeah. But then we broke up, and eventually I met David. The rest is history.
Yeah. But a good one, too. Yeah. All right. What is a favorite story to tell about your relationship with David early on?
I told you he was sort of, like, into, like, space and, like, the stars and, like, the universe, I guess. He definitely wasn't into astrology, I'd say, like, astronomy, but I met his parents, and we, like, went to his childhood home. I don't know, this is kind of a sappy story, but we, like, went on his roof and got to, like, watch the stars come out, and his parents live, like, in a, sort of, like, in the woods of South Carolina, and it gets really dark at night, and we got to, like, watch the stars together, but it kind of reminds me of our first date. We went to the pipeline in Richmond, and he had never been there, and we, like, watch the stars together. And we thought it was, like, so romantic. I don't know. I feel like it's something special that we both remember fondly.
Yeah. So that's beautiful. All right, Ashley, some of those bigger questions. What are some obstacles you had to overcome, and what did you learn in your life?
That's a hard one. So a lot of it is, like, relying on myself and not, like, running to God first. Just something I'm, like, still learning to do, but I feel like my whole life is sort of, like, you only got yourself, like, me, myself, and I.
Channeling, you know, no one's that music.
Yeah. You know, even my grandmother, she was a very bitter woman. She'd tell me stuff like, you can't trust anybody, like, not even your family. I felt like growing up, I didn't really internalize that, but as I got older, I did. And just feeling like, can't trust people. Like, how can I even trust God? Like, is he even here with me, like, during this hard season? Like, I have to do something to fix it. Right. I need to, like, either remove myself from the situation, or I don't even know. I had a lot of, like, even in my marriage with David, a lot of times where I just wanted to run away and not deal with it, and just, like, we're just gonna call it off. I don't know. So a lot of, like, self-reliance, and yeah, I'd say that that's a big one.
What about things that you're into in the past that you can't relate to now? Sounds like you have a lot, because you keep saying, I don't really remember.
Yeah, it's
this
quite
person.
A lot.
Yeah.
I mean, one that's really obvious is tennis. Like, I used to be obsessed with tennis and, like, watch it a lot, watch tennis matches, but that's, like, an easy one. Yeah, I'm just a lot. I'm just different than I was, but I still have similar interests. I wasn't, like, super into, like, drug culture, but that, I'd say, like, smoking weed was, like, something that I did that I don't care about at all.
All right, what can you look back from this point in your life and appreciate now that you did not at the time?
I did have a lot of family support, even though I may have made it seem like I didn't. I guess we had a lot of family and community support even after, you know, after my mom died, even though it, like, wasn't through the church, like, neighbors. So the best friend I was telling you about, that, like, we'd go to her church with her mom, like, basically her mom sort of became, like, a second mom to us, and she'd have us over all the time and, you know, like, invited us to her church. There's a lot that I appreciate, even the hard things. But I'd say, like, the support, and even me being, like, a spoiled, rotten brat, like, taking for granted, like, the neighborhood I lived in, and just all of it. Like, the safety that I had, I guess, in a sense. Like, my life could have been a lot worse. Like, yeah. I had a lot of positive things in my life, like supportive teachers, and, like, even though they weren't, like, supportive in, like, I maybe the specific way that I may have needed at the time, but, like, I was never, you know, like, abused or anything like that. Like, I had a lot of, like, positivity in different areas of my life that, I don't know, things could have been a lot worse, I guess. I don't know.
Did that giggle girl ever come back?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I feel like she's kind of here now with my kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, but for a long time, I didn't think she ever would. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Do you want to share a little bit more about David and, yeah, just how you decided you want to get married and become part of the church? And
yeah. So when I first met David, I wouldn't have ever told you, like, my desire was to get married, or I always loved children, but I kind of always thought, like, that would never be me. Like, I would never really have a family, and it would be nice, but just felt like people who had that, it's just, not that I wasn't worthy of it, but just felt like that just wouldn't be me. And yeah, meeting David, he was just very different from a lot of the men I had met before. He was very, like, transparent and honest and genuine and kind, and just not like the typical men in his demographic at that time. Just, like, no playing games or whatever. And he was, like, very serious, like, for his age about certain things.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
So that was very refreshing to me, that, like, he wasn't, like, you always mature, but at that point he was pretty mature. It's hard to put myself back into, like, exactly, like, what we were thinking, but we knew, like, we felt convicted about, well, we had been living together for a while, like, before we got married, and eventually we felt, like, really convicted about that that's sinful, and, like, we should not be doing that, and, you know, like, either we had to break up or get married. And we were like, well, it just makes sense for us to get married. Like, we love each other and we're all in. Mm-hmm. So we might as well be all in together. So that's like the short story. But I'm sure there was a lot more that went into that. A lot of conversations with you guys and like the pastors. And
yeah.
But it's hard to remember like the specifics of what were we thinking.
Mm-hmm. You know?
But generally, I'd say that's what we were thinking.
And you had a pretty wild wedding.
Oh, yeah.
Want to share about that?
Yeah. So we initially had plans to sort of have a traditional wedding. But as we started planning, we just, I guess, became impatient. And also, we didn't have a lot of money at the time. So I thought, well, what if we just elope and get married, like, you know, on Skyline Drive? And, you know, we had to find someone to marry us. And we asked Pastor Brian, and he said, sure, I'll marry you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what we did. We got married on the side of a mountain, and Pastor Brian came, and it was really cool. Yeah, it's really funny looking back on it that he would do that for us. It's mm-hmm. amazing. Really generous. And just something that, like, the bond that we have is just this thing that we have. We can always be like, remember that time?
Yeah.
It was super windy and cold. It wasn't supposed to be that cold. It was in October, so it wasn't, but it was just like frigid up there, and everyone was like in.
Did you have to hike?
Coats. No, not too much.
Okay.
But you did have to walk down a little bit. David's mom's scared of heights, so she was a little bit nervous, like holding on to mm-hmm. David's dad. But my sister and her husband came. David's parents came. I remember his brother, Chris, came, and I think his other brother came. My dad came. So it was pretty small, but it was really lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many years ago is that?
We got married in 2016, October 22nd.
Awesome. So fun. I wanted to also ask you, is there anything else you wanted to share about your mom on the podcast?
Well, one thing that I've been thinking about, like, as I've become a mom, of course, like, I miss her a lot of the time, but especially, like, when my children were born, I missed her a lot. And just thinking about, she really loved babies. And I just remember that about her, like, that was her favorite, just to, like, hold, snuggle a baby. And just, I just think about how she would be such a great grandma. And I don't know, it used to make me sad, but now I just kind of look back on it and just can see that in myself and in my daughter, Emerson. She just loves babies and gravitates towards them. So that's one thing, like, I've been reflecting on her. And because as time passes, there's things that I just forget about her, which I don't want to, but it just happens.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that I hope I don't ever forget. She just loved to snuggle babies.
And dance.
And dance, yeah.
Do you dance with your family?
I do, yeah. David's not much of a dancer. I mean, I'm not a great dancer, but I just like to, you know, dance around it. I've been trying to introduce, like, some of the songs my mom used to play for me. It's kind of been, like, convicting. Like, some of the songs I'm like, I'm not going to play this one, but I'll play maybe this one. And Riker really loves to dance. He'll dance to, like, Michael Jackson and PYT or something.
I feel like you always have a good playlist on when I come
over.
Oh,
thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to share that maybe you didn't get to say, something that I missed?
I don't think so.
Okay. That is your soil, Ashley. Before we close your episode, what woman have you observed in our church family where you can say that was the aroma of Christ? And would you pray for that woman?
Yes. So I have seen Christ's character displayed in Holly Huffman. We're not actually like super tight friends or anything, but we're actually neighbors, and we've been neighbors, I think, for about a year. I really would have liked to
like
have
you
been...
can spy on her.
Yeah,
neighbors.
Yeah. Yeah, you can see like her backyard. Like our kids, when they go out on the porch, like they can yell to her kids, like when they're in the backyard, they'll like climb to the top of their playset and be like, Izzy, Mila. And it's really cute. But I have definitely seen Christ's character displayed in her generosity and hospitality in the midst of like the difficult like newborn season, having a baby. If we were sick, she would bring a meal. Or I've called her before when my children have gotten injured, and she's a nurse, and she'll be like, oh, just do this and this. She'll like offer me medicine for the kids, like if I don't have something, or like just so generous and genuine. And I'm super thankful for her, and also wanted to highlight her respect for her husband, and the way she serves her family is something I aspire to be like her. Yeah, she's super awesome. So I'll pray for her now. Dear God, I just thank you and want to lift up Holly Huffman. Thank you for placing her and her family into mine and my family's life, God. I just pray that you will just help her to know how loved she is by you. And God, I just pray that she will continue to rely on you in everything that she does. And I just pray that that you'll hopefully always keep us connected to one another. And I just thank you so much for her and her family. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you for listening to the Whole Home Podcast, a podcast that displays the unity of sisters in a local church and the way God so wonderfully gives us to each other in our uniqueness and in our sameness for His glory. The stories we share weave together as one grand testimony to the work of Christ and His faithful presence in the garden of our lives. Remember, the Master Gardener is always at work, so let's yield to Him and grow where we're planted.